Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Other voices. Section A, page 7, Odessa American for Sunday, January 10th, 2021. Guest few, take a moment to thank law enforcement this weekend. U.S. Attorney Greg N. Sofer, Western District of Texas. Saturday was Law Enforcement Appreciation Day, and it could not come at a more critical time. Despite a brutal 2020, law enforcement is still out there protecting you, your property, and your loved ones from those who would take all that you have. But with the current climate, we may soon have fewer and less qualified officers, less protection, and more crime. Indeed, this downward spiral has already begun. The ranks of law enforcement have experienced record levels of retirements, lower levels of recruitment, and we have seen increasing crime rates in cities throughout the country. Over the past 29 years, I have worked with hundreds of federal, state, and local law enforcement officers, public servants who choose to go to work intent on making a positive difference in our communities. They see the worst of humanity, but willingly and purposefully step into the line of fire to help the vulnerable among us. Law enforcement officers demonstrate real acts of heroism. They save lives, prevent injury, confront violence, and help those who cannot help themselves. Helping is what motivates them. They do their dangerous jobs with little external reward, often with little gratitude, and with little understanding by the public of the challenges they face. Imagine the federal agents who must mine through a seemingly never-ending stream of vile child pornography, desperately trying to rescue child victims, haunted by barbaric images of innocent children being abused. Or consider the local police officer who realizes a family's financial hardship and pays out of pocket to stock their pantry with food. Know that Border Patrol agents dive into muddy waters to rescue drowning children, and that local police officers routinely sit on sidewalks and talk people through mental health episodes while securing them needed services. Our law enforcement professionals are burdened with the weight of the human struggle, and they respond with compassion, with kindness, with concern so much of the time, and often unnoticed or unseen, that's the way they prefer it. The risks to these professionals are incredible. Each day they leave their homes uncertain if they will return, if they will be spit upon, cursed, or assaulted, if they will be forced to make a split-second decision that could injure or take a life, if they will lose their life, if their spouse will be widowed or child will lose a parent. When we see them in uniform, it's easy to forget that they are human beings just like us, that they too have parents, spouses, children, and people they love, that they worry about paying their bills or making it to their child's ball game. They do a job most of us are unwilling and incapable of doing. They run towards gunfire and expose themselves to COVID and other contagious diseases. They tolerate unjustified vilification, work with deficient resources, endure constant criticism, and largely accept relatively low wages, all the while handling the very worst our society has to offer, all so that we don't have to. In the current environment, one must wonder why anyone would do this job. I realize that people make that bad decisions every day, that corruption creeps into every profession and into the highest echelons of authority. Law enforcement is not immune. Indeed, I have prosecuted police officers during my career for abusing their positions and committing crimes. We expect our law enforcement officials to be held to the highest standard. But the overwhelming majority of our law enforcement professionals do their jobs exceedingly well and with motives society should emulate. Tarnishing the reputations of thousands who wear the badge is like stereotyping of any kind, innately wrong and exceedingly dangerous. This weekend, when you see an officer, detective, deputy, sheriff, or special agent, take a moment to step into their shoes, to listen to their stories, to understand the person. Thank them for their service to our community. After all, you need them, and they need your understanding. Greg N. Sofer. Guest View: Why the Texas Google Lawsuit Matters, by Chris Salcedo. It wasn't long ago that Google CEO Sundar Pichai tried reassuring concerned lawmakers that his company isn't a dangerous monopoly that many fear. The market, he said, is healthy and competition is thriving. Well, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton recently filed a lawsuit demonstrating how all Pichai's competition talk is nonsense. Rather than embracing competition in online advertising, Paxton found that Google paid Facebook a king's ransom to stay out of the market and redirect its customers to Google's services. Paxton's finding of collusion between Google and Facebook isn't unprecedented. It draws many parallels to a separate deal Google made with Apple, where the company paid billions for a decade to make Chrome the default search engine on its iOS devices. Under healthier marketplace conditions, consumers could expect Apple's Safari browser to go head-to-head with Chrome. However, Google seemingly paid Apple more than what it could make on the market to install the Chrome browser. Money talks, as the old saying goes, and Apple appears to listen. Hardly a sign of healthy competition, these brow-raising big tech alliances reveal a marketplace dominated by a few big players that are willing to increase prices and lower the quality of consumer services for the right price. Google, long at the top, has created a digital empire worth over $1 trillion that currently faces no real competition. The company's immense power is dangerous because it has essentially allowed Google to play by its own rules. When it can get rivals to agree to terms it likes, it pays them off. When it can't, it seems to try taking their property or services anyway and then use its team of lawyers to evade consequences. Chris Salcedo, the president of the Conservative Hispanic Society, is a Texas radio talk show host heard on WBAP and KSEV.
Hello, this is Michael. All of the articles that our volunteers have read this week, including news items, opinion columns, and features, have already been broadcast. I'll be reading additional articles from the Midland and Odessa newspapers to fill for time. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, January 15th, oil page. OPEC signals it's on track with goal to drain oil inventories, by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. OPEC is on track with its objective to deplete the world's bloated oil inventories. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries will undersupply global crude markets even as it restores some halted production this month, data from the monthly report indicated Thursday. A new production cutback recently announced by Saudi Arabia, the cartel's biggest exporter, will deplete stockpiles even further over the next 2 months. OPEC Secretary General Mohamed Barkindo said on Wednesday that the main priority of the group and its allies is to pare stubbornly high stocks left behind when the pandemic crushed fuel demand. What we are focused on is how we can assist the market in accelerating the stock drawdown in order to bring the market back into balance, Barkindo said. Stocks in industrialized nations remain about 160 million barrels above their five-year average, he added. OPEC's efforts have revived oil prices, which are trading near a 10-month high above $53 a barrel in New York. While the report released by OPEC's Vienna-based research department on Thursday didn't make any forecast on stockpile trends, the data it contains offers a guide on how balances will develop. If OPEC goes ahead with its modest increase of 500,000 barrels this month and the Saudis fulfill their promise to slash 1 million barrels in February and March, the organization will pump an average of about 25 million barrels a day during the first quarter, according to Bloomberg calculations. That's considerably below the 26.79 million barrels the group believes is required, and will thus reduce inventories at a rate of 1.8 million barrels a day in the three-month period. OPEC left annual forecasts for supply and demand in 2021 unchanged, though it said that the first quarter will be tighter than previously estimated as consumption picks up and output from its rivals slows. Accelerating demand means that oil stockpiles could fall even faster in the second and third quarters, depending on what production policy OPEC and its partners choose. The 23-nation OPEC Plus alliance will meet in March to decide if it can go ahead with restoring output further. The report also showed one of the challenges brewing in the background for the coalition. Iran, which has suffered punitive sanctions on its crude exports imposed by U.S. President Donald Trump, restored production to about 2 million barrels a day in December. President-elect Joe Biden has signaled readiness to revive a nuclear agreement that would allow Tehran to significantly ramp up supplies. Such a move could undermine efforts fellow OPEC Plus nations have made to keep the world oil markets in balance. Oil climbs with U.S. aid, hopes brightening consumption outlook. By Andres Guerra-Luz and Alex Longley, Bloomberg. Oil rose to a new 10-month high in New York on expectations that a potential $2 trillion economic relief package could get Americans consuming more fuel. U.S. benchmark crude futures advanced 1.3% on Thursday. President-elect Joe Biden's advisors recently told allies in Congress about the cost of the package, CNN reported. A weaker dollar also boosted the appeal of commodities priced in the greenback. West Texas Intermediate for February delivery rose 66 cents to settle at $53.57 a barrel. A stimulus package will be putting direct money into people's pockets, said Josh Graves, senior market strategist at R.J. O'Brien & Associates, LLC. In general, it's going to allow them to travel more and do more things, helping support crude demand. Crude's recent gains have stoked concern among some investors that the rally is ahead of itself. Technical indicators suggest oil is likely due for a pullback, with the global Brent benchmark on its longest run of overbought days since 2012. Rising U.S. jobless claims point to the bumpy road ahead for a true recovery in consumption. Europe's oil demand is also off to a sluggish start to the new year as renewed lockdowns to curb the spread of COVID-19 limit the use of road fuels. There are also signs that physical markets are softening in Asia, with Abu Dhabi's Murban crude at a discount to its benchmark, despite continued OPEC Plus cuts. To the extent the COVID situation is continuing to push back, it's a weight on the market, said John Kilduff, a partner at Again Capital LLC. This is just a bit of a breather, given how we've come so far so fast. In Asia, China's economic recovery gathered pace in December as exports jumped, pushing the trade surplus to a record high. At the same time, oil imports, however, fell about 15% compared with November. While the China import data has many traders and analysts scratching their heads, it seems to be more of a timing issue rather than a structural change in demand from the world's biggest oil importer, said Ryan Fitzmaurice, commodity strategist at Rabobank. Meanwhile, Royal Dutch Shell's PLC's Nigeria unit declared a force majeure on the country's flagship Forcados crude oil after the grade's pipeline was halted in the wake of leaks. Forcados is the country's biggest crude export system, with shipments through the terminal running at a rate of between 200,000 and 250,000 barrels a day. Commentary: Why Big Oil Isn't Slashing Its Ties to Republicans Yet. By Liam Denning, Bloomberg. Big Oil faces that old political dilemma. You know the one. On the one hand, the industry's chosen party has its back on regulation and climate policy. On the other, the same party also tried to overturn the result of a Democratic election in favor of a president who encouraged a mob to attack the Capitol, thereby endangering our whole way of life, which underpins, among many other things, the ability for any industry, oil included, to conduct business. It's a head-scratcher, all right. Let's just get out of the way up front that any of the 147 congressional Republicans who voted to undo the presidential election result deserve to be defunded into political oblivion. But corporate donations aren't about doing the right thing. They're about doing the useful thing. Hence, it isn't that surprising oil companies have been cautious in joining the growing crowd of companies announcing they will pull contributions to offending GOP House and Senate members or the party in general. Some oil majors, such as ConocoPhillips and BP PLC, have said they will suspend all contributions to both parties for several months, while ExxonMobil Corporation and Chevron Corporation will review their practices. This is probably a simple cost-benefit judgment. First, no oil company will likely garner much PR benefit from moving quickly on this. Critics won't rethink their opinion of big oil, which is centered on the issue of climate change, because it leaped to democracy's defense. Second, the downside is potentially big. The surprising Democratic victories in Georgia's runoffs, giving the party narrow control of the Senate, leave big oil with some delicate political math to ponder. Senate Republicans are a critical bulwark against the passage of sweeping climate legislation, especially with the legislative filibuster still intact. Red states account for the overwhelming majority of fossil fuel production and processing in the U.S., and the decades-long transformation of energy and climate stances into tribal markers in America's culture wars binds congressional Republicans to the industry in a way that transcends mere output. The industry's contributions to both parties haven't been even remotely close for years. So, a 50-50 Senate, in the context of an administration committed to decarbonizing the economy, doesn't leave big oil with much room for further Republican losses. Come 2022, 20 out of 34 Senate races will involve Republican incumbents defending their seats from Democratic candidates and potentially Trumpist primary challengers, with the latter's radicalism increasing the odds of a seat being lost if they become the candidate. Of those 20, 7 are in states with at least some oil and gas extraction, including 5 big ones: Alaska, Louisiana, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and Pennsylvania. One of those, Senator John Kennedy, Republican Louisiana, features in the roster of 8 senators who voted to overturn the election result. Although his 21-point margin in a state that went for President Donald Trump by a similar margin likely insulates him from opprobrium. At the other end of the scale is Senator Pat Toomey, Republican Pennsylvania, who won by just 1.5 points in a swing state that went for President-elect Joe Biden and has been forthright in calling for Trump to quit office. There's also the risk around a dozen Republican senators defending seats in states with no appreciable oil and gas business, blunting the usual appeal to job preservation in campaigning against climate policy. Half of those are in states that don't have much coal mining either, a traditional ally in opposing climate measures. On this front, big oil may harbor concerns about the likes of Richard Burr in North Carolina, who won by single digits in a state that went only narrowly for Trump, or Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who, like Toomey, won a narrow victory in a state that went for Biden and has worked harder than many to sow doubt about the election result. The risk of helping to unseat more Republicans by withholding cash, plus the prospect of a few plaudits for doing so, dictates the logic of moving incrementally or on a both sides basis. That isn't to say it's right or without risk. As I wrote here, the ideological pact between big oil and Republicans have been an effective shield for decades. But as climate has elbowed its way into the American consciousness and a swath of the GOP has embraced protectionism, populism, and now electoral nihilism, the shield risks becoming an anchor. One intriguing upshot of this is that more fossil fuel money may flow toward Democrats, specifically those at the other end of the party spectrum from Green New Dealers. When two Democrats won Georgia's Senate races, Joe Manchin, Democrat, West Virginia, was the third winner, with leverage to largely dictate the scope and pace of climate policy. In a world where overt support for the Republican Party carries a stigma, Big Oil may regard Manchin as a more acceptable face for its defensive strategy. Continuing with a few more articles from the oil pages this week, I'm going to Thursday, January 14th's Midland Reporter Telegram for the oil page. U.S. imports no Saudi crude oil for first time in 35 years, by Sheila Tobin and Julian Lee, Bloomberg. The U.S. didn't import any Saudi crude last week, for the first time in 35 years, a reversal from just months ago when the kingdom threatened to upend the American energy industry by unleashing a tsunami of exports into a market decimated by the pandemic. Eliminating the reliance on Middle East oil has been a dream of every U.S. administration since the presidency of Jimmy Carter in 1977. Just 12 years ago, when Joe Biden became U.S. vice president, American refiners were routinely importing about 1 million barrels a day of crude oil from Saudi Arabia, the second largest supplier to the U.S. after Canada, and seen as a major security risk. Just three presidential terms later, that flow has fallen to zero. It is the most visual manifestation of how little America now relies on Middle East oil, after shaping its foreign policy for decades around its need for crude. If this abstinence from Saudi oil continues, it would weaken the economic, political, and military links that have defined relations between Riyadh and Washington for decades. The lack of deliveries follows a slump in crude shipments to the U.S. that left the Desert Kingdom in recent months. Since tankers from Saudi Arabia take about 6 weeks to reach import terminals on either the West or Gulf coasts, the drop is only starting to show up now. This is the first week America had no deliveries based on available weekly data through June 2010 from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. A longer history of monthly figures shows this is the first time there were no Saudi imports since September 1985. Earlier this week, OPEC and its allies reviewed their production plans, allowing small increases for Russia and Kazakhstan in February and March, with the rest keeping production unchanged. Then, Saudi Arabia surprised even its fellow producers by announcing a unilateral cut to its own production of a further 1 million barrels over the next 2 months. The OPEC leader's decision caused global benchmark Brent oil futures prices to surge beyond $54 a barrel, and its U.S. counterpart, West Texas Intermediate Crude, to break through $50. The supply cuts, which date back to a producer agreement last year, have helped shore up crude prices, even as fuel consumption struggles to return to pre-pandemic levels. In the past month, oil prices have risen on hopes that demand could improve as a number of vaccines are starting to be administered to combat the health crisis. While the U.S. imports of Saudi oil hitting zero is historic, it's likely this is temporary and only an aberration given the current low refinery runs and deep Saudi production cuts that are going to increase against the backdrop of the ongoing pandemic environment, said Karim Fawaz, Director of Research and Analyst for Energy at IHS Market. America is still in the throes of the pandemic, with record infections in many states forcing new restrictions while some other parts of the world are recovering. U.S. gasoline consumption plunged to the lowest in years during the usual high-demand Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday periods. The demand loss is so acute, some U.S. refineries have been idled. Throughput is still below where it was before the crisis because of reduced domestic demand. So why send more here when Asia is where recovery has been clear, said Sandy Fielden, Director of Oil and Products Research at Morningstar Incorporated. For Saudi Arabia, cutting shipments to the U.S. is the quickest way to signal to the wider market that it's tightening supply. The government is alone in publishing weekly data on crude stockpiles and imports, which carry enormous influence among oil traders. Other big petroleum consuming nations like China publish less timely information about oil supplies. In May and June, Saudi deliveries to the U.S. more than doubled from a year ago in the aftermath of a bitter price war with Russia. The onslaught prompted Senator Ted Cruz, a Texas Republican, to tweet in April, "My message to the Saudis, turn the tankers the hell around." American refiners received the final installment of that bumper load in early July. Since then, Saudi oil shipments to the U.S. have steadily declined. In November, and then again in December, they delivered only 73,000 barrels a day to customers, preliminary U.S. Energy Information Administration data show. In the short term, the election of Joe Biden could benefit Saudi Arabia. While transitioning away from hydrocarbons would have a long-term impact on oil demand, hopes to revive the 2015 Iranian nuclear deal would pave the way for more Iranian oil to flow globally. Those sales would displace Saudi oil, and that would mean Arabia would have to turn to the U.S. to maintain sales, said Andy Lippo, president of Lippo Oil Associates, LLC, in Houston. Shale will need more than $50 oil and Saudi cut to boom again. By Sheila Tobin and Alex Steele, Bloomberg. Don't count on America's shale industry to boom once again in response to $50 a barrel oil and Saudi Arabia's plan to throttle back its own oil production. What in previous years might have triggered a knee-jerk reaction by U.S. oil explorers to raise output and grab market share is this time around more just an opportunity for them to pay down debt or boost dividends. Our primary priority right now is to reduce debt, Occidental Petroleum Corporation Chief Executive Officer Vicki Holub, who heads one of the largest exploration and production operations in Texas's Permian Basin, said in an interview with Bloomberg TV on Tuesday. "We're pretty close to the right production profile for $50 a barrel today, because what we're doing is to just further improve our margins." Saudi Arabia's surprise decision Tuesday to curb output by 1 million barrels a day in February and March caused oil prices in New York to surge above $50 a barrel for the first time since February, before the pandemic sent oil markets crashing and over 40 explorers went bankrupt. Halima Croft, chief commodity strategist at RBC Capital Markets, described the move as an especially sweet gift for U.S. shale drillers. But even before the pandemic, Wall Street was growing weary of shale, an industry that had burned through billions of dollars in cash while delivering little in the way of returns for investors. So producers are more likely to use the tailwind from Saudi Arabia to pay back investors, as opposed to raising output to capitalize on the rally. To increase production, shale will need a sustained price of above $50 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate crude, or probably closer to $60, said Aaron Brady, executive director for IHS Market. Since the pandemic, we've had very, very little time to read any sports whatsoever, so I'm going to read a few sports articles now from the local papers. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, January 15th. Former OC and UTPB standout hired as MC softball coach, by Oscar Leroy. Midland College has recently hired former Odessa College and UTPB standout Angel Castro as the softball program's head coach. Castro was recently the head coach at Coastal Bend College in Beeville, where she was 13-6 in a shortened 2020 season due to the COVID-19 pandemic. She will be the third head softball coach in MC's history. Castro replaces Amanda Evans, who resigned in August, to accept a teaching position at Odessa High School after 3 years as head coach of the Lady Chaparrals. MC was 10-10 last year before the season ended because of the pandemic. "I am so grateful for the opportunity," Castro told the Reporter-Telegram. "We have a great deal of talent, and I want to continue to develop that talent. I'm just super excited to be here." A graduate of Haltom High School in Fort Worth, Castro began her collegiate career at Odessa College, where she was a middle infielder and helped to lead the team to the 2009 NJCAA Region 5 West Championship title and a berth in the NJCAA Division Softball National Tournament. OC finished eighth nationally that year. Castro stayed in West Texas to continue her playing career at UT Permian Basin. During her time with the Lady Falcons, she led the team in home runs and RBI and has tied for seventh in career hits, 93, after just playing in just two seasons. Castro said that her familiarity with the area was the biggest reason she was attracted to the job. I went to school in this area. I am very familiar with the conference. I have family in this area, Castro said. Coming back here was always in the back of my mind. I've always loved the people. Everyone is really nice. You get that small town feeling and still also get that big city deal as well. After graduating from UTPB with a Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology in 2011, Castro joined the staff at Eastern New Mexico University in Portales, New Mexico, where she worked primarily as a hitting and infield coach. After earning a Master's of Science in Physical Education from ENMU, Castro joined the Paris Junior College softball staff as an assistant coach. A year later, she became the head coach of the program and led the Lady Dragons to the NJCAA tournament in 2014 and 15 for that region. She finished her stint at PJC with a record of 57 and 44. Castro also spent time as an assistant at Cisco Junior College prior to taking the job at Coastal Bend. Castro, who is in the process of searching for an assistant coach, added that with her previous experience in both the Western Junior College Athletic Conference, Region 5, and her connections, the transition will be a little smoother than what it normally would have been if she would have come in blind. The Lady Chaps begin their season on January 30th when they head to Brownwood to play Howard Payne University and Sul Ross. From Odessa American Sports Page, Friday, January 15th. Rodeo. Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo. Planning makes for smooth transition. Work begins well in advance, by Michael Bauer. On January 2nd, a sheet of ice covered the floor at Ector County Coliseum as the Odessa Jackalopes were finishing up their weekend series against the Shreveport Mudbugs. Immediately after the game concluded, the crew at Ector County Coliseum set to work, spending the next 24 hours transforming the arena from a hockey venue into a rodeo venue for the annual Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo that began on January 8th. The transition, according to the Coliseum directors Aaron Martin, takes a lot of work and prep time. We actually start preparing for the rodeo in December, so it takes us quite a long time, Martin said. We give the guys a little bit of time off for Christmas and then get going. Martin's crew will prep the main Coliseum before Christmas with holding pens and for the bulls that go into the Coliseum annex. We play a few hockey games into the new year, Martin said. We had a hockey game on January 2nd, and then we took the entire rink down and were putting dirt in the very next day. As soon as the Jackalopes game was over, the crew removed the glass from the dasher boards while the chillers were turned off to melt the ice, a task that's made more complicated when they try to remove the Jackalopes and corporate sponsor logos without damaging them. We have a crew that starts tearing things down, Martin said. While that's going on, we spread ice melt over the ice on top of the logos because those logos are reused and sponsors are taken out of the ice without damaging them. When you have an inch of ice over it, it can be a tough undertaking. Martin said the transition lasted from about 10 p.m. January 2nd to 5 p.m. the following day. After that, the rodeo board comes in and takes over. They do their magic with setting up the arena with dirt and sponsorship banners while we're keeping things clean, Martin said. With the COVID-19 pandemic still ongoing, Martin said they disinfect everything after every single event. That adds to a new level to what we've ever done before, Martin said. The entire crew at the Ector County Coliseum is about 13 people, including Martin himself, but he's proud of what they've been able to accomplish. These guys perform miracles time after time, Martin said. A lot of it is behind the scenes, and the guys don't want to be in the limelight, but it's amazing what we're able to do going from one event to the next. Even after the rodeo starts, there's still plenty of things to worry about. Martin said the opening weekend of the rodeo is usually the most stressful. I would say that first weekend is where you're juggling all the livestock with the rodeo contestants, Martin said. That does put a lot of strain. We have a lot of trash. We're trying to disinfect everything and keep it clean. The second weekend is when things are a little bit calmer. The livestock portion of the rodeo is closed. It's not easy, but events manager Adam Contreras had plenty of praise for his employees for making everything work. First off, big shout out to our guys, Contreras said. It's not easy. It's hard to melt the ice and take everything out and take the glass out. It's a big weekend, you can say. After the rodeo, the Coliseum will host O'Reilly's Arena Cross event January 22nd and 23rd. Then the Jackalopes return to their home where they will face Wichita Falls beginning January 29th. Getting the venue back to ice hockey is probably the trickiest, according to Martin. It's certainly more challenging to go back to ice, just because dirt goes everywhere and it's hard to clean everything up, Martin said. We wipe down everything for a few weeks afterward. As soon as we get it cleaned out, we're putting in dirt for the next rodeo. Now we switch back to the Midland Reporter-Telegram for a sports article from yesterday's Thursday, January 14th's page. MISD Narrowing Search for MHS Head Coach Opening by Christopher Hattern. The Reporter-Telegram has learned that Midland ISD Executive Director of Athletics, Blake Felt, has narrowed his focus to 11 applicants in his search for a new Midland High head football coach. The Bulldogs head football coach and athletic coordinator position became open on December 4th, 2020, when Tim Anuskovich was reassigned after going 10-31 with two playoff appearances in four seasons. Felt conducted interviews with six candidates on the road last week and has five additional interviews planned with candidates in their hometowns this week. Felt said Tuesday that he's traveled 1,800 miles so far in order to conduct the on-site coaching interviews. I will go right over 2,000 miles, so I'm beating the bushes, Felt quipped. Felt said Midland ISD will narrow its search to 4 to 5 finalists by next week and bring them to Midland for additional interviews. Felt will recommend a final candidate to the school board following interviews with the finalists in Midland. Felt said his timetable is to have a new MHS head coach hired by the end of the month. Ideally, Felt said he'd like the new Bulldogs football coach to work with the Rogers Ford Tall City Relays track and field meet on February 12th at Doc Dodson Memorial Stadium. Our hope is to have our head coach hired and working when the track meet rolls around, Felt said. That way, all the other local coaches will be there and all the kids. That gives them a chance to see everybody. Hopefully he'll be working for at least a week by then. Felt said the school district has received additional applications since the Reporter-Telegram obtained a list of 39 applicants for the job last week. Felt said the school district will accept applications and consider all applicants until a hire is made. From Wednesday's Odessa American, that's Wednesday, January 13th. Tortilla Soup and Chopped Salad Start 2020 Off Right by Brenda Garcia, MSRD, United Supermarkets Lifestyle Desk. Well, it's officially 2021. The dietitians at Market Street have been working very hard preparing for 2021, and we are very happy to encourage you to get off to a good start this year. After all, it's not about how many times you stop, but how many times you start. This year, let's focus on starting to eat healthy, starting to focus on health, or maybe starting to learn to cook. Maybe it's starting to cook again or starting to try new recipes. It's going to be a fun year, and we are so excited to start January with an easy recipe that includes a unique way to use a salad kit. Let's take a look at why some of those greens are important to include in your diet. Did you know that green fruits and vegetables are high in vitamin A, C, and K? Well, the nutritional value doesn't stop there. You also get disease-fighting phytochemicals specific to the green color of the food. Well, if this has convinced you to eat more green fruits and vegetables, then did you know that eating green produce can also help with weight management? These foods are lower in calorie and higher in fiber, which promotes a feeling of fullness. If you're looking for the most healthful varieties, we recommend picking lettuce that has a vibrant green color as well as the loose leaf varieties such as bib, arugula, watercress, or romaine lettuce. Research shows that these tend to be higher in phytonutrients, or disease-fighting properties, and are nutritionally better for you. Also, did you know that if you tear your lettuce and store it in a sealed bag with small holes poked in it, you can increase the phytonutrient content of your lettuce? This tortilla soup is delicious, but also provides you with important green vegetables. The cabbage, kale, romaine lettuce, and dull green onions add hearty, filling texture. Even further, the included dressing gives the soup a yummy creaminess and a smoky, tangy flavor. For an extra boost of creaminess, you can even add some diced avocado for a home run of green for dinner tonight. A few more tips. Market Street United Supermarkets have a $1 off digital deal for the chopped salads. Just download to your rewards account. No coupon cutting needed. Also, our team of dietitians has put together a downloadable cookbook with lots of recipes. The recipes are also sorted with ideas for healthy, keto-friendly, paleo-friendly, plant-based friendly recipes, and just plain old healthy recipes. Visit www.happyandnourished.com/start to download your free copy. Quick and easy tortilla soup with chopped salad. Yield 4 to 6 servings. Ingredients: 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1/2 cup red onion, chopped 1 teaspoon ground cumin, 1 package Dole chipotle and cheddar salad kit, 1 cup cooked corn kernels, 1 cup cooked black beans, 1 cup cooked chicken, chopped, 1 can, 10 ounce, diced tomatoes with green chilies, undrained, 6 cups low-sodium chicken broth, 1 lime, juices, plus additional wedges for garnish, salt, and pepper to taste. Sour cream is needed. Chopped cilantro is needed. Instructions. 1. Heat oil in large soup pot over medium-high heat. Add onion and sauté for 2 minutes. Add cumin and continue to cook for an additional 2 minutes, stirring occasionally. Add salad greens from kit to pot and cook an additional 4 to 5 minutes or until salad is wilted. 2. Add corn, beans, chicken, tomatoes, and chicken broth to the pot. Bring to a boil. Reduce heat, cover, and simmer 10 minutes. Add the dressing packet and lime juice. Season with salt and pepper to taste. Ladle into bowls and garnish with sour cream, cilantro, tortilla chips, cheese, and lime wedges. Midland Reporter Telegram, Saturday, January 9th, 2021, Viewpoints. Our fellow Americans are not the enemy. Editorial, Midland Reporter Telegram. Democracy worked this week. In all of its messiness, democracy worked. An attack on our nation's capital was thwarted, and the men and women of our Congress immediately got back to their important work at hand of tallying the ballots from the Electoral College. A president and a vice president of the United States of America were confirmed in accordance with the laws of the land. As part of that process, a spirited debate occurred challenging the ballots submitted by 2 of our United States. This debate was followed by an open and transparent voting process in which each of our elected representatives had an opportunity for their vote to be recognized and counted as to whether the electoral ballots from those 2 states should be accepted. Deep divisions exist within our country. Can this divide be healed? History would suggest it can. Minute-by-minute reporting and the advent of social media highlight the current situation and add dramatic context to it. However, our republic has survived worse, much worse. Let's not forget that previous divisions in our society resulted in a civil war. This war resulted in the death of more than 600,000 Americans at the hand of our fellow citizens. While our current divisions may be deep, they are not as deep as they may have been in the past, and they are not irreparable. How do we move forward then, away from the divide? We begin by understanding our fellow Americans no matter their political persuasion, are not the enemy. Fundamentally, Americans are not the enemy of other Americans. That is important because we have real enemies in this world who would like nothing more than to see our democracy and its citizens, both Republicans and Democrats, destroyed. What stands between our continued freedom and our mutual destruction are our American brothers and sisters, all of them. Leaders unite people with divided interests. Politicians highlight the divide. At this moment in time, each of us needs to become better leaders within our community, within our state, and within our nation. That does not mean we need to completely set politics aside, but we don't always need to lead with them either. Our political leanings should be a piece of who we are, not the totality of it. Each of us lead by understanding that words matter. Insults, derision, and hate divide. Respect, compassion, and mutual sacrifice for a greater good unite. Let's work toward unity. People will assess us by our words and our actions. God is taking note as well. Let our words and our actions reflect our humility and our acknowledgement that we are each fallible, imperfect, and that we are often wrong about things. Let each of us become leaders within our own circle, working with conviction, but also compassion for our fellow Americans, no matter their political persuasion. Is America okay? Absolutely. We have weathered much worse than this, and we will continue to do so. How do I know? Because our democracy worked yesterday. Again. Shedding some light. Congressman Crenshaw, they lied to people about what January 6th was. Opinion column by Stuart Doreen. The following is a comment from U.S. Representative Dan Crenshaw when he appeared on Fox News and was asked about calls for Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Josh Hawley to resign because of the riots at the U.S. Capitol this week. In less than 3 minutes, Crenshaw provided a lesson to anyone willing to listen about the lies that were told about what January 6 offered and about what some people were telling about the possibility of overturning electoral votes. Here was his answer in its entirety. Let me be clear as possible here. Senator Cruz and Hawley, I disagree with them in a fundamental way about the constitutionality of this Congress on January 6th, the ability of Congress to overturn any electoral votes, period. So let's be very honest. Senator Cruz and Senator Hawley were not hyping up January 6th. They were not calling for people to fight in the streets. They were not saying this was our last stand. That being said, many members of Congress did do that. Many commentators did do that. Many of the media have been doing that for the last few weeks, constantly saying this is our time to fight. And let me tell you something very clearly. They've been lying to people. They've been lying to millions. They've been lying that January 6th was going to be this big solution for election integrity. It never was going to be. I mean, 2 hours of debate, forced 2 hours of debate. That was just some time for some opportunistic politicians to get 5 minutes of time on the floor. It was never going to solve anything, and it was always unconstitutional. You have to have these hard battles won at the state level. That's where the hard work is done. That's how you solve the important question of election integrity. And they lied to people and they said, go fight. Go fight because everything's on the line. That's what they said. And when people thought they came to fight, and then they fought Capitol Police, and now people are dead. And those same members of Congress who called people to fight, well, they were nowhere to be found because it was all fun and games to them. They never knew what a real fight was. Real fights are scary. Bullets flying. That's scary. The glass breaking, that's really scary. They were nowhere to be found. They scattered. They've been talking about the courage to stand up to this, the courage to fight for weeks and weeks. But when it came down to it, there was no courage. That's what really happened, Martha McCollum. That's what people need to know. They were lied to. They were lied to about what January 6th was. Election integrity is important. It has been important to me since the day I entered Congress. But I know that I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to tell you where we actually have to do the hard work. And we have to change these laws at the state level, because these laws are loose. They don't give people any confidence. People are getting ballots that don't belong to them. There's no voter ID, no signature verification. We hear you. We hear you. But we have to come together and work at the state level and change these things. It won't take long for conservatives in West Texas to make notes about which Republican officials, commentators, and social media warriors push those lies. And conservatives out there, that list starts with the man who will call out those people in his party who were not there for the American people. It starts with Dan Crenshaw. Commentary column by Stuart Doreen.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. MMR vaccine is critical. Dear Dr. Roach, we have friends who got the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, believing it will help with exposure to COVID-19. What are your thoughts on their thinking? PH. Answer. The World Health Organization has reported an increase in measles deaths since 2016, and that trend has accelerated in the past year. The COVID-19 pandemic certainly is having an effect on measles vaccination, and with a drop in vaccination comes a loss of herd immunity, meaning that a measles epidemic could spread in the population. Mumps and rubella are important too, but measles is incredibly infectious, far more so than COVID-19. And it is fatal in perhaps one case in 1,000. At a global level, getting children immunized against measles remains critical. A study published in November 2020 showed that people with high antibody titers to mumps had less severe COVID-19 symptoms than those who had low antibody titers. It's possible that people with generally strong immune systems, as evidenced by high titers to mumps, will have better outcomes if infected by COVID-19, rather than it being a specific effect of mumps antibodies. The authors of the paper do not currently recommend booster shots for MMR. At the time of this writing, several COVID-19 vaccines have been shown effective, and at least two have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. I suspect that they will be in the process of being given to the highest risk groups on the day you are reading this. They are much more likely to provide protection than an MMR booster, in my opinion.
Couple reaches a stalemate in marriage without intimacy. Dear Abby, for Friday, January 15th, 2021. Dear Abby, my husband and I are both enlisted Army. He, 20 years, 2 Iraq deployments. I, 15 years, 1 Iraq deployment. We met in the service and have been married for 10 years. 3 years after our wedding, my husband told me he was no longer physically attracted to me. It hurt a lot. It has been 7 years since that day, and we're still together. I don't feel loved, appreciated, or valued. I'm a logic-driven person. Emotions don't come easy for me. I have always been open about my thoughts and feelings, even the painful ones. Since that day, I resent him, and I have told him such. He doesn't understand why I can't just get over it and continue to live our lives. He has refused therapy multiple times. I don't have a family of my own, and we have no children together. Must I appreciate the friendship we have, or is it time to push for a meet-in-the-middle resolution? Unappreciated in Pennsylvania. Dear Unappreciated, that you would feel resentment after what your husband told you is normal. It appears that intimacy is either unimportant to him, or he is finding it elsewhere. Your self-esteem may be below ground level, but you have a right to be able to feel loved, appreciated, and valued. Since you are receiving none of those, there is no meeting in the middle. Where you need to meet is a lawyer's office, so you can officially end a marriage that died 7 years ago. Dear Abby, my dad has never been great at communicating. I'm the only one who seems to communicate with him, even though I'm across the country. Over the last few years, until recently, his new wife, Dory, helped bridge the gap. I loved having Dad around, even if it was secondhand from her. When my aunt, his sister, died suddenly, somehow I was appointed to write the obituary. Having never written one, I inadvertently omitted Dory's name in the article. She became enraged and defensive. I apologized, but I also showed my teeth a bit because she was so rude about an honest mistake. Now communication with Dad is as strained as it was before. I think she screens and answers his messages, so I'm unsure if it's him replying. Dad was sick recently, and she didn't bother to tell me. I learned about it through Facebook. I'm a nice person, but she really upset me. I have already apologized and explained it was a mistake. I want a relationship with my dad. Should I apologize again? Frustrated daughter in the West. Dear daughter, yes, apologize for reacting the way you did, showing your teeth, after the obituary disaster. Dory's feelings were already hurt because of your omission. If you can, smooth over what happened. However, recognize that your relationship with your father didn't make him a better communicator. You were keeping tabs on him through the efforts of his wife.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Capricorn and a moon in Aquarius until 5:17 p.m., when the moon enters Pisces. Happy birthday for Friday, January 15, 2021. Heroic, idealistic, and pleasure-loving, you have a fearless center that allows you to accomplish impressive feats. This year, utilize it to go after what you want. You succeed brilliantly. If single, a faded quality affects close ties, and this year you decide which one is to be your mate. If attached, you idolize each other and need lots of intimate time together. Pisces worships the ground you walk on. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Today suggests a powerful troubleshooting pattern. You will find ways to make adjustments that create ease and more enjoyment in daily working life. New organizations and groups are interesting. Let friendly camaraderie touch professional relationships. Tonight, be a true friend to one you love. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 5 stars. Your mind is especially quick and alert today. Be progressive about your career path. Your job is in transformation. Project a positive, professional image at work. Reputation will be an influential factor. Make decisions and communicate. Tonight, a realistic and practical mindset brings success. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Today promises a new joy. New publications and a class or discussion group delight you. Be tolerant of the beliefs of others. It is better to teach by example than try to convert anyone to your own path. Tonight, journal away. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 5 stars. You are regenerating on many levels. It is time to dispose of the old to make way for the new. Do not repeat financial patterns that haven't worked before. Looking into matters more deeply brings facts to light. Tonight, believe the best of others. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 4 stars. Fairness and balance are important. Let others have freedom. Cooperation and understanding will pay off. Your ethical attitude wins admiration in the end. Others are loyal. An important new partnership can be forged. Tonight, you will insist on fairness. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 2 stars. You will be critical of yourself today and will want to overcome any shortcomings. So give yourself a break. Count to 3 when these thoughts come. Have faith that as long as you do your best, all will be well. Tonight, relax. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 5 stars. Today brings a happy meeting with an old friend. Your warmth and affection acts like a magnet, drawing companions your way. Social activity increases. Others are more loving and cooperative. Tonight, you can share a good joke with someone you care for. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 3 stars. You will have visitors or other activity around the house. Stay safely distanced. Family members express ideas that can take a little getting used to. You might live part of the time in another residence or try to make home improvements. Tonight, relax. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 4 stars. Today finds you exploring ideas. Sift through information to clear up confusion. You will make the right choices. Go slowly with contacts and promises. Express positive thoughts in conversation as well as writing. Tonight, finally answer all the old emails. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 3 stars. Today gives you added energy to direct into financial matters. Your enthusiasm and effort bring you profits. Valuable information about money management and investments come to the fore. Tonight, reach out to an in-law. You could become much closer. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. Your charm and popularity are on the rise. Relationships strengthen. Others develop a deeper fondness for you. This helps you understand your own attachments and deeper feelings. You will feel a surge of energy and enthusiasm. Tonight, there are some meaningful conversations. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. You are changing inwardly, reacting to people and situations with more objectivity and poise. You will find satisfaction and involvement in altruistic actions. This could take the form of helping a coworker with an overwhelming task. Tonight, others confide their problems to you. Born today, activist Martin Luther King Jr., 1929, rapper Pitbull, 1981, actress Regina King, 1971.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.